Welcome to It's Your Turn. I'm Brenda Florida, certified life coach, and no matter how exhausted, stressed, anxious, or overwhelmed you are, there is hope. You can start exactly where you are. There's nothing wrong with you. In fact, you're ready for it to be your turn, or you wouldn't be here. You know, we hear words like vitality and confidence and empowerment and transformation, but what do they really mean? What do they look like in the practical aspects of our life? In the It's Your Turn podcast, we explore, learn, and put into practice practical tools and wise concepts for transformation. This is real life change, not platitudes. It's the intersection of the practical and the aspirational. It's your turn to make decisions that are aligned with exactly what you want. And if you've lost connection to what you want, that's okay, we'll reconnect it. You'll learn how to shift out of self-sabotaging patterns and tap in to the clarity, confidence, and vitality that you may feel like has been lost forever. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat of your life and embrace the power that is within you. So let's get to it. Hello, everyone. It's your turn. And today I'm going to do a little trigger warning here before I start. I'm going to talk about my story to a greater degree than I probably ever have, certainly ever have on a single episode of my podcast. And there's been some, you know, trauma and drama in it. And so I just want to let you know that you'll probably want to only have this being heard by adult ears if you want to get your headphones on, your AirPods in, all the things. This is going to be, you know, a little quick. Of course, I'm not going to go into all the details, but I want to give you a nice broad brushstroke of some of the things that I have overcome in my life. And I say that not so that you will be comparing yourself to me, or certainly not for you to feel sorry for me or anything like that. I have a very strong belief that everything that has happened to me has happened for my good. And whether you believe that about your own life story is, you know, certainly up to you. But I know that all the adversity that I have faced in my life is part of why I am the way I am. It's a large part of what makes me such a great coach, in my humble opinion, and in the opinion of all my clients. But, you know, it's by going through these things, it's what I learned through them. It's how I use them to go deeper into my inner life instead of only being focused on the circumstance. Now, the circumstance is always important. We have to deal with circumstances like the loss of a job or an abusive relationship or trauma or abuse, you know, all those things have to be dealt with. Financial challenges. Oh my gosh, I've had such a roller coaster of financial stuff in my journey, which you will, you know, hear about here in a moment. But whatever it is, yes, those things have to be dealt with. And when I coach people, we work with those practical things. How do we solve the practical problems that are facing us today? And how do we go deeper and sort of look under the hood and see what has been causing those? Where's the pattern that I am subconsciously repeating? Because when I tell you this story, and part of the reason I decided to do this is because I want you to see, because I think you will. I think as you listen to my story, you will see how certain things are repeating themselves in my life. Because you're not me. So it can be a challenge to see those patterns sometimes in our own lives, and not a challenge for other people to see them, which is part of the benefit of hiring a coach or a therapist. You know, either one. I've used therapists many times and coaches many times. In fact, I'm seeing a therapist currently because I know I have to practice what I preach, which, you know, there tells you a little something about my religious background that kind of a phrase would come up in my head right away. I haven't been to a church in 20 years, but anyway, I want to walk the talk. And so I need help at times helping me process that inner journey because I have my own blind spots too. So I'm doing this today for, I hope, everyone's benefit, not just to tell a dramatic story, which it is. And probably someday I will write a memoir and fill in a lot more details than I'm going to do here. But you know, it's been an exciting life. It has been a challenging life at many times. There have been many, many, many amazing moments, and I'm not going to end up hitting a lot of those amazing moments today. Our podcast will go on for hours. So I don't want you to think either by any stretch of the imagination that the things I'm about to say to you are a whole representation of my life. I am intentionally sharing the obstacles. I'm intentionally sharing the traumas and the adversity so that you can see these patterns and kind of the trajectory of how it's evolved, and also to give you clues, as I will along the way, and that you will see yourself for how I have used these very difficult circumstances in order to actually create inner healing, inner strength, inner resilience. And it's what makes me, you know, sort of the unstoppable creature that I am, I suppose. And that doesn't mean I'm never stopped, because, you know, none of us are 100% unstoppable. Well, maybe somebody is, but I'm not going to pretend to be. I get knocked on my butt from time to time too. So, all right. So we're going to dive in here. So grab those headphones if you haven't already. So I'm going to start with, I married my high school sweetheart. So in my teenage years, I lived in Evergreen, Colorado, a really beautiful mountain community, and went to a church there and met my future husband at church. We also happened to live really close together. It was a big rural area, so that was kind of a little bit of a coincidence that we lived actually so close. But we didn't know each other from the living in a nearby neighborhoods. We knew each other from church. So we started dating, and I fell in love, of course, because that's who I am. Like, I fall in love easily and often, you know. So I was so in love with him, and he was 3 years older than me. So we had, high school was only 10th, 11th, and 12th. So that meant I was in ninth grade. He was a senior. So we never actually went to school together. He graduated, went off to college. We did not date. We started dating when I was in ninth grade. So I was 15 when we started dating. But then when he went off to college, we broke up. For the first couple of years he was in college, I dated other boys in high school, but I always sort of had a sweet spot for him, you know? And so sure enough, in my senior year, he came back home. He was a little disillusioned with college and came back to stay with his parents for a year. And so we started dating again. And by October of my senior year, he proposed and we were engaged. So I wore an engagement ring most of my senior year of high school. And so to me, you know, it was a very romantic story. And I was very involved, as was he, in a very fundamental evangelical Baptist church. Now, he grew up in that church because his family hadn't moved. I grew up in Southern California, and then near outside of San Francisco. And then we moved to Colorado when I was in junior high. And so, but even in California, all the churches we went to, same flavor, very conservative, even fundamentalist, evangelical, you know, so everybody who doesn't believe they need to ask Jesus into their heart to forgive them from their sins is going to hell. It was all very judgmental and very, very, very fundamentalist. But I embraced it wholly and without question. Like, I was not one of those kids who questioned my beliefs. I wasn't rebelling against the church. I was buying it all hook, line, and sinker. And I was a good little apostle out there knocking on doors to, you know, save people from their sins and, you know, of eternity in hell and all that stuff. So I meet him, you know, we do our dating thing. We get engaged in high school. So right after I graduated in June, we got married in August, and then we moved back to the college town that we were, that the University of Northern Colorado is in. It's called Greeley, Colorado is the town. And so we moved to Greeley. He was going to go back into school, finish his business degree, and we were going to be entrepreneurs. That was always our dream. Now, I was never going to work. We had very traditional, you know, if you think of that conservative religious, very super patriarchy, you know, women are definitely inferior, we're meant to take care of the home, all those kinds of things. That's what I was raised in. I didn't question it. I didn't think I was smart. I grew up, I don't know why, when I look back at it logically, like I got good grades, I didn't even try that hard in school. But for some reason, I had this story in my head that I was not smart. And so I was really terrified to take the SATs because I thought I would get a terrible score. And I didn't want to face that. I didn't want to be humiliated by that. And so here I am, my senior year. I engaged anyway. I didn't take them. I don't want to go to college. You know, all I want to do is get married and then have businesses, have a family, you know, and stay at home and take care of my family and support my husband as he has all these, you know, successful businesses. So that was my plan. And we got married. He's, you know, goes to school. He ends up getting disillusioned again with school. I get pregnant about 6 months or so after we got married. And so he went to work for Domino's Pizza because it was a great opportunity. This was like early 1980s. And so Domino's was flourishing, was growing really fast. We were living in this college town. There was lots of corporate advancement for him there. And then franchise opportunities. So he did that for the purpose of us franchising. And so sure enough, you know, about 2.5 years later, we moved to North Carolina with our two babies at that point. By that time, I had, my oldest was 2 and our youngest had just been born. He was like 3 months old. And we moved to North Carolina and started franchising with Domino's Pizza. We had ended up opening 3 stores over about 3 years. And during that time, I started realizing, one, we had another baby. So then we had 3 kids. And I started realizing how disengaged my husband was in our family as a husband and as a dad. I mean, I did everything and he just wasn't engaged. So without going into all the details of that, we're growing apart. I blame the business. I think it's because he's working so hard. That's what he says, you know, because he's working so hard. Otherwise he would, you know, do all these things I wanted him to do and just to do with us. I mean, some of it was, I wanted some help, right? I have 3 kids under 5 years old. I wanted some help, but beyond that, like we just didn't, he was at work all the time. So we sell the stores and then we just had one. That was great. We made good money. I got pregnant again. We had our 4th. So now I've got 4 kids. I'm 26 years old. We're financially great. We're set up. We have a house paid for. We're living in a small town in North Carolina. You know, the expenses are pretty low. Housing's pretty low, but you know, we're doing great. We've got the cash from our business. Our house and our cars are paid for. We, you know, we haven't even turned 30. We seem very set up. We'd go to Disneyland, sometimes twice, Disney World, of course, being on that side of the US because we were in North Carolina. Sometimes we'd go 2 or 3 times a year, you know, so we're living great. Okay. Not McMansion great, but we have a lovely little, you know, home and in this small town and, you know, driving new Hondas and going to Disney World whenever we want to. So I'm a super happy camper and we sell the business. I think I'm going to get this husband I've always wanted and the father of my children I've always wanted, but none of that happens. And in fact, the next business he decides to do, which I'm not really all for, I didn't really want to do it, but I figured that's his realm, right? My realm is at home. His realm is the business and it failed. And he just kind of, I'll say in hindsight, probably never recovered from that emotionally, mentally. And so then we went through all of the money we had saved up. We mortgaged our house. We, you know, we're just financially drowning. And he never really gets good work again. I mean, he gets work, you know, but we're always now just barely making it, barely making it, barely making it. And that was not the life I signed up for. Plus, I still don't have a husband and father for my kids I wanted. And I started to realize that other things were going on that I didn't understand at the time. I got into therapy. I was super depressed, which is so unlike me because I'm very optimistic and positive. And through that, just to make a long story short, I realized he was very verbally and emotionally abusive to me. And the kids some, but he took it out more on me than the kids. And as I began to understand that and my own codependent ways, which were from my own childhood and the parents I had, and all the people pleasing, that we talk about frequently, like I was deep into that. I totally lost myself in trying to be who I thought my husband wanted me to be, who I thought the church wanted me to be, my friends wanted me to be, all the things. So as I started finding myself and not tolerating his abuse and sort of speaking up for myself, not sort of, absolutely, that's what I was doing. I did not do it all the time. It took very little speaking up for myself before he was like, stop it. I don't like who you are anymore. But he wanted to stay married, even though, he's admitting and claiming and owning that he doesn't like who I am. But this whole religious concept of God hates divorce. And so he wanted us to stay married. And I was not willing to do that. And so we ended up separating. And it was financially super challenging. So now we've had a hard 10 years, probably almost anyway, financially. And now I had gotten into real estate. I was also waitressing a couple nights a week. Like I'm working two jobs and taking care of the kids. And, he's working one job and not helping with the kids anyway. So we separate. And I realize I'm going to have to support the family that I had never, I don't have a college degree. I never thought I would really work in my life as an adult. And all of a sudden, over the course of, 6 months or so, I realized the truth is he's not even hardly making enough to go get himself an apartment, and live on his own. So I can't really expect any child support or not much. And so I went and pitched myself. I was working in a real estate office as an assistant to another agent. And I pitched myself being their first full-time non-competing manager. And I sold them on the idea. It worked. And then you want to talk about imposter syndrome? I mean, I had the job, I had the income then that I needed to support me and the kids. I did eventually get some child support and stuff, but that so we survived all that. I kept the kids and I stayed in the house. I refinanced it, all those things. I was able to keep our house. And I had this great job. It was my dream job. And I absolutely felt like an imposter every day. Nobody was talking about imposter syndrome then, but I had it in spades. And so anyway, we go a couple years like that. Life settles down. Things are good. I'm making good money. The kids and I are doing fine. They see their dad, on the weekends, kind of a thing. And that was great for me. I mean, I suddenly had more help with the kids than I'd ever had. And I started volunteering in community theater. Love, love, love that. And then I go to on a real estate convention and meet who would become my second husband. So he lived in Pennsylvania. So for those of you who know, I lived in Pennsylvania for like 22 years. That's what took me there. And I was very cautious, consciously, in that by then I'd been in therapy for many years at that point. Like, I don't know, probably 10 years by the time I with the same therapist, which was awesome, by the time I met my second husband. And so I was very clear on the ways that my codependency and my inability to speak up for myself contributed to that whole situation, not my responsibility that my ex was emotionally and verbally abusive, but I understood the way I played into that and sort of allowed that and how I stopped it and, all the things. So I'm very conscious as I'm going into this second relationship of, what I'll do, what I won't do, all those kinds of things. And he was right on the same page with me. Yes. We, of course, we're dating long distance because I'm in North Carolina. And then he proposed, the kids and I moved to Pennsylvania. So that was a big deal because my kids, their whole life, and then my first two were born in Colorado, but they were babies when we left, So for my kid, and my second two were born in North Carolina. So to my kids, that was all they knew was North Carolina. And so I take them all out of school. My oldest, I left behind, actually. That could be a whole nother podcast. So that she could finish out her senior year of high school. She lived with her dad and with a girlfriend, whose family, took her in kind of part-time, and with her dad, on the weekends and stuff like that, because he lived a little far out of town. And so she couldn't stay with him every night while she was in high school. Anyway, so I leave her behind. My next oldest is a son, and he's in 10th grade. So I moved that kid when he's a 10th grader in high school. And the other two, one was in junior high. My other daughter's in junior high. My youngest is in 5th grade. So that was a whole trauma, as you can imagine. My ex-husband was stomping and yelling and screaming about that. I had to jump through all sort of hoops in order to get the kids out of state. And that's probably something, that's probably one of the few things in my life I would not do the same way, but whatever. I was in love. I thought the second husband was like my soulmate, perfect partner kind of thing, and it was going to all be worth it. We'd all, get over it kind of a thing, the move part, and settle down in Pennsylvania and have the dream, the life of our dreams. And within 6 months of that, of marrying him and us living together, I knew he was on an emotional level exactly the same as my first husband. Now, personality wise, and the way he operated in the world, very different. He was very outgoing and very charismatic and blah blah. So he seemed very different. But when there was stress, I mean, this is how you know when your relationship, what's really going to happen in your relationship is when you don't agree with each other, right? So long as you're agreeing and things are not too stressful, all is well. But once stress started happening, because it does, it's life, and I've got kids and he's got kids, and actually, in a way, the blended family was the easiest part. But what was happening was he was, again, repeating the pattern of emotional and verbal abuse. And it took me a little bit to catch on to it. But once I did, I caught it faster, right? And so I started speaking up for myself faster, and he couldn't stand it. And he would get super passive aggressive and all the things. So it only took 2 years, and we were getting divorced. And I'm moving my kids, who I have moved to Pennsylvania for this great love, into, a rental townhome. And I had also just recently lost my job. So first of all, I've only lived in Pennsylvania. I'm in real estate, but I'm not established myself. I barely have my own, like network and connections and stuff. And I got laid off a couple months on the day we separated was when I got laid off. So by the time we got divorced, I had started a new job, but I was pretty new in it. It was paying okay, but not great. It had great potential. But so anyway, that was another huge financial setback for me to suddenly have to support, the kids and not have, he provided us a home. Like we lived in his house. So anyway, that was a big financial upheaval, but I really focused on my career. I did very well. That job expanded into an ownership opportunity. The kids and I discussed whether we would move back to North Carolina or stay in Pennsylvania. I wanted to let them have a big part of that decision because I had uprooted them, and here it was only 2 years later. But by then, they were making friends and starting to make roots, so to speak, in Pennsylvania. And my oldest daughter by then had graduated from high school and chosen a Pennsylvania school. So she's in college in Pennsylvania. So we decided to stay. So we stay, and we have actually what's probably about 6 really good years. My career is going very well. They're settled. We're happy. I'm doing some dating, whatever. And we have these good years. And then I get, in essence, laid off again. I don't need to go into the whole story of that, but suddenly I don't have the real estate office I was at before. And I've only got a few thousand dollars in the bank. I've got to go find another job. It was just totally unexpected, very sudden. And I'm being uprooted again and starting over again. I was just like, oh, come on. Now, at this point, I'm about 46, probably. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, starting over again. I can't hardly stand it. So, but you do what life brings you. So I end up getting another job. I moved to Harrisburg, which is kind of central in Pennsylvania, and start new work there. So I end up staying in Pennsylvania for about, I don't know, 8 years or so. I can't remember exactly. I meet at right before I turn 50, I meet a man who I'm serious with. And in fact, we ended up living together. And so that was the first real serious. I mean, I would date guys sometimes for several months at a time, but nothing all those years in between my second husband and turning 50. I left my second husband on my 40th birthday. I moved out 3 days after my 40th birthday. And a few months before my 50th, I meet this third man in my life. And I think this is going to be fantastic. You know, I'm settled in my career now in Harrisburg. I'm doing very well there. I meet this great guy. My kids like him. He likes them. Like things seem really, really good. Oh, except those little red flags. And I dismissed them because he was so good, kind, generous in many ways. And I chalked it off to, well, Brenda, nobody's perfect and no relationship is perfect. And then I moved in, and there were so many red flags then. If we had the time and I told you some of them, you would be like, oh, come on, Brenda, you didn't figure it out then. But anyway, I didn't. I kept dismissing them. I mean, I saw them, but I dismissed them as we are prone to do, particularly in romantic relationships or just, you know, some kind of dismissal, diminishment, just like, well, nobody's perfect. Every relationship has its problems, whatever. So, about 3 years into that, we had lived together about 2 years. So here I'm going to drop a sex reference little story here. So you can be ready for that if you want to, you know, turn down the volume or whatever. He gave me an ultimatum that I had to have sex with him every day or I had to move out. I was also living in his home. So we were in his home. And so, if I was not willing to promise him, wouldn't, he didn't use the word promise. He said it would be a rule that we had to have a rule that I would have sex with him every day. Now, of course, at that moment, I'm like, oh, wait, every red flag was actually a real red flag. And I thought this guy loved me. And I mean, he said he did, but now I know that what he really wanted was someone to have sex with all the time. I loved having sex. So that worked really well for a long time. And the ironic thing was we were having so much sex. I mean, you know, more than probably everybody within 10 miles. But I had told him no a couple times, and that pissed him off. So, a foundational piece to each of these three emotionally and verbally abusive relationships, and in any abusive relationship, is the dynamic of power and control. It's that another one of the person people in the partnership, and it's not a partnership, so I use that word very loosely, has to have the power and control. And so when I told him, hey, I don't want to have sex today, a few days before he gave me this ultimatum, that rattled him because he had to have power and control. And I'm sure that he thought by giving me that ultimatum, because, oh, the other thing that had happened was several months before I had gotten into my coach training. And I was very unhappy at that part in my of point in the job I was in because of the leadership where I was working. There were some things that frankly felt very unethical at a minimum. Like I spoke to a lawyer about being a whistleblower at the company, you know. So I was very unhappy there. And so he was like, no problem, honey. Quit. You can quit your job and I'll support you until you finish your coach training and then set up your private practice. And I thought that was so delightful. In hindsight, I'm sure it was to have more power and control over me. So when he gave me that ultimatum, I was unemployed and I was almost done with my coach training, but I knew it didn't matter. Like I was leaving, but I'm not staying with somebody who's going to set up a rule like that. So I left a week or so later and came out to Southern California to San Diego and stayed with my mom. My mom, her husband had passed away, my stepfather. And so she had room for me. And of course, she was delighted to have me come. And I figured I could bear it for a while for the sake of being able to go to the beach every day, you know? So I stayed with her. And that's where the bug really bit me that I wanted to move back to Southern California. I hadn't lived in Southern California since I was a little girl. So I got that bug. But anyway, I was brand new. I had just gotten my, life coach training done, and I was slowly growing my business, but of course, not too many clients. And then I got an offer to go back full-time into real estate with a company I had worked before in Pennsylvania. So then I went back to Pennsylvania, had a couple of really good years again there. So things settled down again. Because when I left that third relationship, I can remember just walking on that beach in La Jolla, where I live in San Diego, and being like, what the actual fuck? Like, I am starting over again. Now I'm like 53 and I'm starting over again, and I can hardly stand it. So anyway, I was very grateful when the job, showed up very serendipitously. And I went back to Pennsylvania. I made good money again, so I'm relaxed. I'm loving where I live. It was a new part of Pennsylvania, like farther north of Philly, closer to Reading. And so I'm making new friends. I'm loving my work. I'm making good money. Everything's great. And then I get laid off from that company. And so at that point, I had been certified as a life coach several years, had a few clients here and there, but I'm working full time, so not doing too much. But I was just like, this is a sign. The time is now. I'm going to go full time in my business. So I went full time in my business, and I was so positive. I took all these classes for online entrepreneurs and coaches to build a business, and I was just so sure everything was going to work, and nothing worked. And some of you have heard this part of this story, but honest to goodness, everything I tried, which I still, even this many years later, it's been 5.5 years since I started full time, almost six. And all the things I did are still considered best practices for building an online business, the funnels and blah, blah. But for me, nothing I was doing worked. And I very quickly went through the very little bit of money I had. And then I couldn't get another, so then I start looking for jobs, at Whole Foods, getting back in real estate, everything. And I can't get anything. I do finally get on at Nordstrom, but it was a small store and I didn't make very much money and blah, blah. Anyway, I wind up homeless for 2.5 years. I mean, I just can't make anything work. And then COVID hit during that time too. That was very traumatic, because now I'm in my late 50s, and talk about starting over from the worst, my life plummeted to the worst place financially it's ever been. I was better off as a single mom with four little kids, and it was so disheartening to me because of all the inner work I had done and my sort of, spiritual journey, if you want to call it that. I don't even know if I want to call it that, but all this inner work, all this time, I'm doing so much inner work to figure out my patterns, my limiting beliefs, my learning how to tune into my own inner guidance. And I really felt in every decision that led to all those years of homelessness, I was following my guidance. Now, we'll see when that memoir comes back how I feel about it. I can tell you, 5.5, almost 6 years after I started that journey full time in my coaching practice, that I still feel like what I did felt guided to me, or felt like it was coming from my inner wisdom. I can't explain why everything went to shit instead of so many other people who have such lovely stories about how when they follow their inner guidance, everything comes together for them effortlessly, and their business grows, or the money comes in, or the, spouse shows up, or the whatever, because that is not my story. But one by one, brick by brick, I continued to grow my business, and I had a side hustle for a while that helped a little bit. I got back to California, and then I stabilized enough to be able to get my own apartment. So now I have this great apartment by the beach. But, I'm telling you, the trauma of those homeless years changed my relationship with money. And it is something I work on diligently every day. I work on it with my therapist, right? Because it really shook me. Up until that point, I had that thought of just like, as many of us do, we'll say like, well, things always end up working out. I can take this leap of faith, and I've always been a big risk taker, you know, I'm always going to leap out on faith, all that kind of stuff. Only this time I leapt out on faith, and then I felt like there was nothing there to catch me, that I just fell flat on my face. And that was very hard. It took me deep into my own work on my own worthiness. Because when you're sitting in your car Googling a homeless shelter, if you place any of your identity on your work, your finances, my relationships were all still good. That's probably what saved me in a way, was that, you know, my kids were super supportive. I had really great friends support. So my relationships were good. But my, you know, I'm a single woman, so I have no partner, no love life. My business is failing. My money is gone. I'm Googling homeless shelters. Like, that'll take you deep into, am I worthy? You know, and I had to find that place where, without anything, if I had to sleep on the park bench, I was just as worthy as I was 4 years before when I was, you know, or 2 years before when I was making over six figures, living in a beautiful apartment, you know, in a place that I loved. Because it's so easy for us to attach our identity to our circumstances. And so if nothing else, I feel like this last 5.5, almost 6 years has really up-leveled my skills of being able to see my value and see my worthiness, feel it at the true deep level that it is for all of us, right? Because you don't have to do any fucking thing to be worthy, right? You can be laying in a coma in a hospital bed and be worthy. Every little baby that's born that isn't cute yet, that doesn't have a personality yet, that isn't doing anything but crying and shitting and eating, is worthy. We are not worthy because of what we do, or how cute we are, or how pretty we are, or how much we've accomplished, or any of those things. And so what I know is it really took me to that level of being able to go to the total bottom and find my worth, even within those horrific circumstances. And so here I am, you know, still, I'm still in some financial, I'm not on easy street, you know, I pay all my bills and I go to the grocery store and, but I haven't been on vacation in whatever it's been now, 7 or 8 years. And I live very carefully. I also choose to live a few blocks from the beach in Southern California, where I know it's very expensive. I could go live in Oklahoma and probably save $1,000 a month right away. But I don't want to do that. So, you know, I mean, I own my situation, my choices that have me in this place, but I'm just saying it is still a daily discipline, a daily level of consciousness to keep myself from being overwhelmed by the anxiety of, am I going to make it this month? Now, again, I'm not saying that for you to feel sorry for me. This is, you know, I have more clients than most coaches. I mean, when you look at the stats for what life coaches make and how many clients they have, it's not very good. So I'm super proud of the business I've built, and I love my clients. And any of you who are clients who are listening to this, I mean, the honor that it is for me to be in the middle of somebody's journey like that and to watch the growth of every client. I mean, I've not, you know, knock on wood, in all these years, I've never had a client that was like a dud, you know, that nothing happened or they quit because they were unhappy or whatever. Like, everybody I've ever coached grows so much. They make so many big leaps, big changes, habit changes, pattern changes in their lives. And it is a thrill to me to be a part of that, to help them with the tools, to help them see what they cannot see. That's what I'm here for. I help people see what they can see, what they cannot see. Sorry, said that wrong. I can see it because it's not me, right? And I'm really good, I think, because of all the things I've been through, and I didn't even cover all of them there, but this is, you know, the long enough podcast. I've experienced so many things, so many moves. Oh my gosh. Even before I was homeless and bounced around from couch to couch and Airbnb to Airbnb and whatnot, I had moved, I think, 10 times easy from the time, no, 10, probably more like 12, from the time I got married until I left my apartment and started that homeless phase. And so, like, there's just so many things there. I've not had a client bring to me something that I can't relate to. And I know what it's like to be in the trenches. I don't have a perfect life where I'm sitting over here just trying to relate to what a client is telling me, you know? And so I think that that's part of what is my superpower for what I do and why I'm so good at helping people through all kinds of diversity, whether it's something financially or professionally or in their relationships or just in their own relationship to themselves, breaking out of the habits of people pleasing, all those kinds of things, because I've done it. I only coach what I know how to do myself, right? I'm not expecting my clients to do something I'm not willing to do. And so I think that's part of what makes this work. And I know it is what I was meant to do. So I heard a quote. I think this was Vincent Van Gogh. I'm not 100% sure, so I may not be attributing that correctly, but I heard this just the other day and loved it so much. Never stop, no matter how many failures. When you know you're doing what you were meant to do, you have to try. And that's how I feel like, whatever the obstacles are, whatever the ups and downs of solo entrepreneurship are, building a private practice, being single, so I don't have any other income coming into the household, you know, all the things. I don't care because I know this is what, well, that's not true. I care a lot, but I know this is what I'm meant to do. And you have the same genius in you. And I've coached some people who didn't know what their genius was, didn't know what they, you know, kind of what that thing is that they're meant to do. And so if you're there, like, that's okay. We can find that for you. I knew what I wanted to do. You know, for many years it was real estate and then it was coaching. And being a mother, I mean, my gosh, I've loved being a mother. And I had all those four kids in 7 years because I wanted to. And, you know, it's just one of the greatest joys of my life. So I've always had a strong sense of purpose, but not everyone knows what theirs is. And so I guess what I'm saying is, wherever you are, first of all, know you are not alone. Whether you're in the depths of despair or you're stuck trying to figure out, you know, what your next move is, your sort of midlife crisis spot, or you got laid off unexpectedly, or you realize you might be in an abusive relationship, or you want to go for a dream and you're scared to, like, whatever it is, I've got you. And I'm telling you all this today so that you, one, I don't want anybody to feel alone in their journey, and to know that I'm here as a resource for you. And that there's always a way out. There's always a way out. There's always a way to something better. And so, actually, I'm going to do something. I've never done this before. But anyone who wants to, who's listening to this, for as long as I make this offer, I mean, this is out there forever, right? So you could be listening to this a year after I say it. But anyway, hopefully, you're listening to this in real time. And for anybody who hears this, I want you to reach out to me. And I will give you a free 45-minute coaching session. So all you need to do is reach out to me any way you want. I'll put, you know, I always have my email in the show notes. I always have my Instagram handle, Brenda Florida Coach. Follow me on Instagram, DM me there. Tell me you heard the podcast, you want to book your free session. In the show notes, I'll go ahead and put a link to actually just book the free session. Okay. You can just electronically book your free session. But I want you to be able to experience the power that coaching can have for you. And I want you to know that you're not alone. And I want you to know that there are people, me and others, who want to support you in your journey. So with that, I will sign off. Thank you if you stayed all the way to the end for this very long story of my life. I'm very happy. I have struggles and I work through them every day, just like you do. Okay. My role as a coach is to facilitate you finding your truth. I'm not giving you advice. I don't have an agenda for you. But what I am really good at is helping you peel back sort of the layers of the onion or, the clouds so you can see the clear skies or whatever metaphor you want to use for that to see what are some of these underlying causes for whatever the problem that's manifesting in your life is, because I promise you they're there. And we can work on the problems, right? The problem going on, the relationship challenges or the professional challenges or financial ones, whatever they are, problems with your mom, problems with your mother-in-law, whatever it is, we'll work on those. But more importantly, we want to figure out, how did I get here? What's going on with me that this was okay? Why did I, like in my relationships, why did I dismiss all of those red flags? And why, because when I understand that, then I can break the pattern itself, not just solve the momentary problem. Okay. And that's where the real power is. So I love you all. Thank you for being here with this very personal episode of It's Your Turn. Thank you for joining me for this episode of It's Your Turn. I've got resources and links in the show notes for you. But here's what's more fun. DM me on Instagram at Brenda Florida Coach and let me know you listened to today's episode. I'd love to connect with you. Then share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it, because I know you know somebody who needs to hear it. And I'll see you in the next episode of It's Your Turn.